Yep, that's us, WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org, 8 p.m. Monday evening. Time now for Housing Notebook with Scott Thoma.
Good evening and welcome to Housing Notebook here on WBAI in New York. My name is Scott Somer. I'm with the Metropolitan Council on Housing, New York City's oldest tenant union. If you need help with a housing problem, give Met Council a call at 212-979-0611. That's 212-979-0611, Monday or Wednesday from 1:30 to 8 p.m., Tuesday from 5:30 to 8 p.m., Friday from 1:30 to 5 p.m. That's 212-979-0611. 0611, and we can get involved in the struggle for decent, affordable housing, help you organize a tenant association in your building, and get you out to City Hall and up to Albany, which we'll touch on this evening. Who knows, we may have to go back to Washington. We got enough reasons to go to Washington already. Housing's always been a constant one, but you could cruise up to the top of the list again one day when the Supreme Court, Lord knows what Samuel Alito will think to do about housing. And there actually always are challenges to rent and eviction protections. And a few times it's gotten to the Supreme Court, we have won those, but there's no guarantee you win in the past, you won't win in the future. So stick with us, folks. You can also find Met Council on the web at www.metcouncilonhousing.org. That's metcouncilonhousing.org. Likewise, our sister website, thetenant.org. Those two websites combined get you all the great information you need about how to know your rights, stay in touch with things like that, and find out about the latest news of what's going on. You can sign up for our email list there, find out about political action, community action, educational events, so on and so forth. That's metcouncilonhousing.org, thetenant.org, and sign up for our info list. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're everywhere. Doing the social media thing. I tweet as well at Scott M. Somer, ScottMSomer. If you want to, if you have any interest in what I think about anything, or you want to know what's coming up on the show, that is a usual place to find a show highlight, or to find where you can find a record of a show, a recording of a show. As we come to you every week here over WBAI 99.5 FM, every 3 out of 4 weeks, that is, but not here next week. Next week's our week off. There'll probably be some interesting programming there. Maybe Mimi will have a 2-hour special. I don't know, but you know, there'll be some interesting stuff next week. We'll be back in 2. So that's why it's important you listen tonight, right? Or you can listen to it tonight and download it and listen to it again next week or some other show that maybe you missed. You can find those at WBAI.org. WBAI.org. And you can also follow the station at WBAI on Twitter. And the station is also now on Instagram, I believe. So you can see the station everywhere, I believe, Twitter and Instagram. I don't think we have a Facebook going, but that's old school, right? So it really is old school because I go back and check to see the hits, and we get our most hits on Twitter and Instagram and not Facebook. But anyway. But at WBAI.org is also the archive where you can listen to shows that you missed, like ours and others. You can download Housing Notebook, keep it forever if that's your thing, you know, or send it off to a friend or recommend it to them, whatever. But we're able to do all this stuff because of WBAI, because, you know, we've been coming to you here on WBAI for over 50 years or so. I'll be coming up on the 38th anniversary come December. Kind of hard to crazy think about. But we're able to do that because WBAI believes in community, in housing, in tenants' rights, and in sound housing policies. So that is why it would be great for you not only to support Met Council and become a Met Council member, but become a member of WBAI. And how do you do that? You do that by going to WBAI.org. That's WBAI.org. Go to our website, click on the BAI Buddy link, and become a WBAI Buddy. The more buddies we get, the less fundraising we have to do. Now, what is a buddy? It's, you know, it's a standing membership. It means every month you're going to donate a set amount, $5, $10, $15, $20, $25, whatever that might be that you think you can afford. And we will gladly take that out of your checking account, on your credit card, however you want to do it. Just go to WBAI.org, click on the BAI buddy link. And then the, you know, best thing is, you know, when you're doing that and they ask you what, show you love the most, please say us, right? Please say you love Housing Notebook. But if you do it during our show time, even if you say hello another show, they'll know you did it during Housing Notebook and admit you probably were listening then. So become a WBAI buddy. Support this radio station. It's a critical time. Just the new, you know, last week while we were on the air and were, had I been smart enough to look at my phone at the text that came in, I would have been able to tell you during the show about the leaked Supreme Court opinion. But, you know, just everything happening is like every day, it's just something else. The January 6th stuff, there's going to be hearings next month. There's more things coming out. You know, the walls of the Trump wall, this guy can't build a wall. Can't build a wall around himself. Couldn't build a wall against Mexico, thank God. But he can't build a wall against himself either, as those walls are cracking and more people are coming forward to testify, including his family members. So, and there'll be many hearings, it seems, in the month of June from the January 6th committee. So we find out the true, we already know so much, but there's so much more we're going to know. And I'm sure that a lot that will be carried live here on WBAI, which is, and you'll get the analysis that you won't get other places. You're not going to get the usual, like, you know, mouthpieces of corporate media, some of whom are okay yet from time to time, but it's not the same. When you hear from people who have no vested interest, who are not part of the political power structure, and that is certainly us here at BAI and the Pacifica Network. So become a WBAI buddy at WBAI.org. Do that today. Join us, be a WBAI buddy, support this radio station, support Housing Notebook. That is a critical, critical thing to do. I'm going to give you quickly the tenants weather report without the music tonight, but just since it is still, I know, you're saying, oh, it was a nice day today. It was a nice day today. It's a beautiful day today, finally. And it's crazy. I mean, it's like May, and like we've been having heat well into May, and the heat law runs through May 31st, folks, the end of the month. And if there's ever proof of why, it's been this year, right? So it is currently 64 degrees in New York City, but let's give you the tenants weather report, right? From 6 in the morning till 10 at night, when it's below 55 degrees outside, it should be at least 68 degrees inside your apartment. So it's again, 6 a.m. to 10 p.m., below 55 outside, at least 68 degrees indoors. Then from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m., when it's whatever it is outside, it should be at least 62 degrees indoors. 10 p.m. to 6 a.m., whatever it is outside, it should be at least 62 degrees indoors. If you're getting heat or hot water, 120 degrees Fahrenheit at all time. currently 63 degrees in New York City. Just updated that temp. So, you know, the heat shouldn't be on right now, but it's going to drop down to about 46 tonight. And if it does that, you know, and it needs to be 62, it's not 62 in your apartment, then the heat will probably may kick on in your building. It could happen. And it might, you might have a little heat in the morning, you know, before it warms up. We have a high of 73 tomorrow, tomorrow night to 48, then Wednesday, like a high of 69th, and then, you know, 50s, 70s, bouncing around the rest of the week. Looks like it's warming up as the week goes on, finally. But anyway, but that is why the heat law is in effect. If you're not getting around the right amount of heat or hot water, do give your landlord a call, but also call 311 if you're in New York City or your local housing enforcement agency in your community. You can find out more about your rights for heat and hot water by going to bit.ly/heathotwater. That's all lowercase, bit.ly/heathotwater. And I'll take you to all one word, heat, hot water. Take you to Met Council's heat and hot water website where you'll see the laws and you'll get your heat and hot water sheet. You can download hot water, by the way, is a 365 day a year thing. So, the hot water does not go off on June 1st. The heat does, but not the hot water. Some landlords, I'm sure, would like to convince you otherwise. So you can even though you might not need the heat portion of the heat and hot water sheet, you will need it, after May 31st. So go to bit.ly/heathotwater and you'll be able to get all that information. It is 8:11 in the evening here in New York. You're tuned to Housing Notebook on WBAI. And I'm going to switch to our guest we have joining us this evening, Sam Stein from the Community Service Society and Housing Policy Analyst. Do you prefer Sam or Samuel? I need to, I didn't ask you before.
From you either.
From me either. I'm special. I like that. Thank you. And Andrea Shapiro, the director of the director of programming, the Poobah of programming and advocacy. They keep giving you different titles. What is it?
Director of advocacy and programs.
Advocacy and programs. All right. You are the grand, high exalted mystic ruler Poobah from the whatever that lodge was in the Flintstones. I forget the name of it. The Water Buffalo or something like that. I forget. But anyway, and Andrew Shapiro from Met Council is with us. Sam impressed me when he came on and told me that he was on last night. He checked his notes and said he was on the show in 2012. I'm just impressed that you kept a note of the fact that you actually were on this program, let alone that you actually were able to find it. Where was this note? Where was this and how did you find it?
It's my resume. It's on my resume.
All right. Well, next time you go to
my first radio appearance 10 years ago.
Wow. I get to brag a little bit because Mark, I don't know if you folks listen to the show called The World from PRX and WBGH and Marco Werman, the host of The World, is a friend of mine. I'm friends with his sister from law school and we became friendly and he was in the Peace Corps and came, to visit New York, whatever. And I said, why don't you come up on the show and talk about the housing in, then it was Togo. Now it's Burkina Faso. And he came on and, that was his first time in the radio, and he always very graciously says his appearance on Housing Notebook at the old studio got him into radio. And I have the cassette tape of that show for him still. So I'm glad that we're on your resume. I hope it actually didn't cost you any jobs, and I hope it gets you a raise. So
if it did, I didn't want him.
Right. Well, you could actually now you can update your resume after tonight. You know, you've been invited back. But so Sam and Andrea here talk to us tonight about actually two things we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the Rent Guidelines Board, you know, it's like the topic of the season every year. And we're going to talk about the Right to Remain Good Cause stuff. I know Sam actually told me that CSS released yet another great report today on that topic. And if you're not familiar with the Community Service Society, by the way, folks, go check out their website. Is it cssny.org? Is that it? It's cssny.org. Go check out their website because there's all these great reports on there and they're written in an accessible manner. So like even idiots like myself can understand them. So, I mean, and that's like the beauty of, you know, a well-written report is the one that people like who will walk in the street and ride in the subway can understand as opposed to these incredibly dense, thick things that no one can understand. So, yeah, and they're never really that long. A few pages. There's always some nice tables and charts and graphics in there and on a whole host of subjects, but housing is one of the main areas that CSS does stuff on. So go check them out. We'll touch on that a little bit later. So let's open up here. So Andrea, last week the Rank Guidelines Board of, I guess, Mayor Swagger, Mayor Swagger, as I like to call him, because to him, Swagger will solve everything. Mayor Swagger's Rank Guidelines Board, he's appointed three people to the board. It's a 9-member board. He's appointed three people, a tenant member, a legal aid attorney, who we've had on, and then a new landlord rep, doing their job, advocating on behalf of the landlord. And then he appointed a public member who actually has expressed hatred towards rent and eviction protection. So that's a good public member. I guess he actually may be more forcefully against rent and eviction protections than the real estate members. So the landlord members. So anyway, so we have this board now. There are 9 members, and they had their big meeting last week, last Thursday, I believe it was. I did watch some of it. And they passed preliminary guidelines. So what did they actually do at this meeting? What was the end result there?
Sure. So they put out the range they're going to consider for the year or for the season. And for a 1-year lease, they're considering 2% to 4% rent increases. And for a 2-year lease, they're considering 4% to 6%. And so they're going to say this is what they have to consider for the entire to make their final decision, though they've actually gone outside of the range once before, so it is possible.
And that the 2% and 4% are for apartments, rent stabilized apartments, and rent stabilized loft guidelines, right?
Yes.
And then they've also proposed 0% raises for the hotels, although who knows if those things are even enforced.
Right. So SROs is a 0 increase and will likely be a 0 increase.
Right. Yeah. The apartment hotels, the lodging houses, the rooming houses and all that stuff. But I have my doubts as to what stuff actually gets enforced. But that's a show for another day. Maybe our friends from the SRO community to come up and talk about. So 2 and 4 for 1 year, 4 to 6 for 2 years in the midst of an ongoing pandemic that's on the uptick, sending our best get well wishes to Governor Hochul for a speedy recovery. Andrew, you had COVID last week. Were you the one? Did you infect the governor when you were like protesting outside her office? Was it you?
Don't give away the tenant secrets.
Okay. But all seriousness, glad that you're better and hopefully the governor will be better soon. So Sam, what's your reaction to, from the analyst as standpoint and from having as one person who reviews a lot of the data? And have you had a chance to look at the guidelines board data that's come out this year? They've done their dump of a certain amount of stuff. So what's your reaction to these kind of proposed ranges?
Well, we don't really think that tenants can afford a rent increase right now. We don't think it's fair that the burden of inflation is just going to fall onto tenants. We think that landlords have, had a tough year as anybody has, but in some ways they've done quite well this last year with massive rent increases being reported all over the place in the market rate apartments. And it seems like what they're looking to do is kind of the opposite of what they always say that the problem is. What they often say is rent stabilized rents are low, and so we compensate that by raising the market rate rents. And they say that that's unfair to the market rate rents. This time they're kind of doing the opposite. Market rate rents fell in 2020. And now they're looking for a big increase from the rent stabilized tenants or the ones who, they're not going to leave their apartments in the way that a lot of folks did 2020. And the data that the Rent Guidelines Board is looking at this year is mostly from peak pandemic, early 2020. So there's a real mismatch between what tenants can afford and what the RGB is proposing. And there's a mismatch between the data right now and the data that they're looking.
Wasn't there also a problem with the, I'm forgetting the exact name of the, because they put out so many different studies. I think wasn't there also real with the income and the income and affordability study. Wasn't this year's income and affordability study particularly problematic in that it really didn't have any data in it?
Well, it has data from a few years ago. We haven't had a new housing and vacancy survey since 2017. And that's the primary way that we have data about who rent-stabilized tenants are, how much money they make, what their other expenses are, the conditions they're building. They're looking at old data, and then they're comparing that to you know, data on homelessness and eviction not being quite as bad in the year that they're looking at. Well, that was a year with a total rent, eviction moratorium. So it's just not relevant data to what's happening right now.
And the housing vacancy survey hasn't happened in 5 years. Is that a pandemic delay, or was it the Trump administration didn't care about that? You know, because he wanted to say all his buildings are fully rented, so he wanted to have a survey. Or
so there's two things going on at once. Usually it happens every 3 years, but they have what they call a census leap year. They don't like to do the housing and vacancy survey the same year that they're doing this every 10-year census, because it's confusing. It's the census who does that survey, and so you'd be having people go into the same buildings asking two different sets of questions. So they delay it by a year. But then there's been extra pandemic delays, which means that it's a year even after that. So, you know, in normal situations, it might have been 4 years since the last one. Now it's five.
And but the survey, I guess, they have a public meeting on the 26th where they're having something called the Housing Supply Report and changes to the rent stabilized housing stock. Is that like a stand-in for that survey? What is this one?
They do that one every year, too. And that's, you know, how many rent stabilized apartments were added and how many were lost. And that was maybe a little bit more dynamic a report in the years when we had vacancy decontrol, when we were seeing, you know, the loss of rent stabilized apartments year after year after year. Because of the struggle that we had and the victory we had in 2019, we no longer have apartments coming out of rent stabilization at the same rate. But we will see about new apartments that were added either through 421A or another program. And we will see if landlords are taking apartments off the rolls too.
So is there a plan for a housing vacancy survey to be done by the Census Bureau?
Yes, it has been done. It's being analyzed right now by HPD. We should have the results in June.
In June. So this data should be available before the final vote, I guess, at the end of June. I think it's have it here. June 21st, hopefully it could, it should have an impact if they were decent people.
It should have an impact. And there's something fishy about having the preliminary vote now. I mean, it's on the calendar. They got to do it. But some of the best data will arrive to the board between when they made their preliminary vote and their final vote. So as Andrea said, they're not legally, you know, bound to this preliminary range. If the housing and vacancy survey shows them things that they didn't know before, they can say, you know what, rent freeze is warranted.
And they do. They are under some of a time constraint to get it done by July 1st because of renewal leases for October. So, I mean, that the July 1 is kind of like a real deadline, but they did have flexibility up to July 1, so to speak.
Yeah, they have some flexibility in timing, but what I mean is flexibility in their final vote, you know, what they actually vote for. They're not legally bound to that preliminary range that they voted on last week.
Why is, if HPD has the data, what's taking them so long to analyze it? It doesn't come out till the end of June.
I mean, all due respect to HPD, it's no easy task. And a lot of agencies are understaffed right now, and HPD is among them. There's been attrition. There's not been replacement. The mayor is talking about budget cuts to most agencies, including housing, in terms of the day-to-day staff, and that's taking its toll. So we're seeing the impact of what happens when our crucial agencies are not fully funded and not fully staffed.
This is sort of a
separate topic, but there is not a single lawyer right now working on source of income discrimination at the Commission on Human Rights for New York City. Not a single lawyer employed in that unit. So there are units that are crucial to the housing system of this city that are just way understaffed. And that's the kind of thing that will create these delays.
Maybe they could send all this data over to the overfunded NYPD and their CompStat computers. They could figure this stuff out. Or even better, maybe you and Oksana and Vic Bach can like go volunteer to say, well, we'll crunch the numbers for you. You know, we know how to do this.
They're going to, you know, undermine their union status and do the labor for free. Come on.
Well, yeah, maybe we can get a waiver from the union for furthering the tenants' rights here. But I hear you. A good union man you are. So, it's the timing of everything is, you know, obviously this mayor, if he wanted it out before, it would get out before, you know, City Hall can make things happen when they want to. And, the delay of a critical piece of data from a highly regarded place, the Census Bureau, you know, is really kind of smells, frankly.
I mean, we would love to see that data whenever they're ready to show it to us. Our teams are ready to look at it.
Your calculators are geared up. So if you're just tuning in, it's 8:24 in the evening here in New York. I'm Scott Somer from Met Council on Housing with Andrew Shapiro, also from Met Council, and Sam Stein from the Community Service Society here. We're talking about the Rent Guidelines Board, the as Andrea let us know, the proposed guideline range that the mayor's board, and these, you know, and it is the mayor's board. I mean, there's just no two ways about it, is 2-4% for 1 year rent stabilized leases for apartments and lofts, rent stabilized lofts, and 4-6% for 2 year leases. These would be for leases commencing October 1st of this year. So if your lease comes up before then, you'll be under the current guideline, which, you know, is less, is has zero for 6 months, then was it 1.5% for the second 6 months, I believe, on the 1 year lease. So that is the current guideline in effect. So Andrea, so what was, and obviously these meetings, you know, they're all on Zoom now. They, even though Mayor Adams believes everyone should be in their office and everything should be happening, you know, in person, he still lets his Rent Guidelines Board meet solely via Zoom. Although they will have some public meetings, I see at the later, and I'll get to that. So what was it like, the meeting last Thursday that was on Zoom with the, you know, the board? What was the tone of that?
I mean, we were able to make it a little more exciting. Shayla was up in the Bronx with CASA members. Unfortunately, Don was supposed to be in Manhattan with some HTC members, but tested positive for COVID, but still managed to give a fiery speech. You know, we really heard from the tenant reps how important it was, and we were able to hear some tenant voices, but nothing matched what the landlords were saying. And really some coded racist language around tenants and wanting more money from tenants.
What if you could recall, what were some of the coded things they were saying?
Sure. A lot of it had to do with sort of tenants being lazy, and, you know, that landlords need more money, that they're the hardworking members of society that we should be protecting. And we know that's not true, right? We're not seeing small landlords in New York City. We're not seeing landlords hurting. We are seeing tenants hurting.
What makes a tenant lazy?
That is a good question.
I don't understand what the, who is the lazy? What is a tenant? And people should know, I mean, you know, the average picture, in Sam, you obviously probably better at this than me, but isn't like a third of the rent stabilized? There's roughly about 950,000 to a million rent stabilized apartments. A third of the tenants, the households are in less than $40,000.
It is the single largest source of low-income housing in New York City. More low-income housing live in rent stabilized units than public and subsidized combined.
And so, you know, we're talking about as a critical part of supply. We have the landlords here using this bizarre language, whatever. And they were seeking to go above. Now, the board earlier had made their own the board staff had made recommendations that were even higher than this. I believe it was Sam. What was it? What happened there?
Here's the thing. The board staff does not make recommendations. This is something that's been bothering me, that's been in the press, as if the staff were recommending. Every year, the staff does something called a commensurate rent guideline. And what that says, or commensurate rent adjustment, what that says is, here's how the rents would have to change for landlords' profits to be the same this year as they were last year. Okay, that's one data point that the board offers, the staff of the board. The elected or the appointed members of the board are under no obligation to keep the landlords' profits exactly the same this year as they were last year, especially when, you know, tenants have been suffering from many of the same costs. So it got reported as if the staff had recommended these high increases, when in fact the staff was presenting one data point among many. But that reported number was as high as 9% for 2 year leases necessary to keep landlord profits flat. Our mutual friend Tim Collins has done analysis that shows that those projections are regularly well over what the landlord's actual costs and expense were in any given year, to the point that we have over rewarded landlords many fold over the last decades, much more than their expenses actually went up with rising RGB rent increases.
Isn't it some, I mean, I'm pulling this out now, the back of my head is here, so if I get it wrong, please correct me, but isn't this like the net income, the operating cost for landlords is something like, I mean, which is the money they have left over after they take care of all their bills, except for the mortgage and taxes, right? Isn't it like some like insanely high percentage of like, what, 40% or something? It's something nuts. It's like.
Well, so net operating income has gone up 46% since 1990.
Right.
So like year to year, maybe it goes down a little bit, but it's a rising curve, dramatically rising curve. And those RGB rent increases are one of the reasons. They are compound increases. You pay it 1 year and then your rent increases by a new amount the next year based on the last one. If you put all that money together, it's a tremendous amount of money that's transferred from tenants to landlords every year.
So are you saying roughly 1990, that'd be what, 32 years? That was my math right there. It's nice to have a analyst on there who's just doing the math like whip fast in his head as I'm saying it. So in 32 years, the net income operating cost figure went up
46.6%, so almost 50%.
I'd like to be in that business, you know.
Seriously.
I mean,
who else has seen their profits rise 50% in the last three decades?
Maybe pharmaceuticals, but you know, that's a whole other story. it's insane. I mean, and they cry poverty, yet they have, you know, now people go, oh, but it doesn't include the mortgage or taxes. Well, the thing is, the mortgages they get, the deals they cut. I shouldn't have to suffer for your bad deal. I shouldn't have to suffer as a tenant for you overpaying for a building, for you speculating in the market, which a lot is what drives a lot of this stuff, you know, and it's absolutely insane that you have that kind of profit margin, so to speak. I know it's not really the profit margin, but you have that. And yet, you run around crying poverty. You can't make ends meet. And why should you be guaranteed? Why should you be guaranteed the same profit you had last year than this year? I mean, my God, my 401k is not going to have the same profit this year that I had last year. It's not like the rent guidelines was going to send me a check.
Yeah. And it goes against the purpose of the entire system. If the purpose of the entire system is to insulate this housing stock from the vagaries of the market. And you know, to have high inflation this year and for all of that to fall onto tenants is completely unjust. Landlords can say, oh, our fuel costs are going up. Well, tenants' Con Ed bills are going up too. It's not fair to simply say the landlord should make the same as last year, no matter what else is going on in the market. And you mentioned debt and mortgages. Yes, landlords often complain that net operating income doesn't account for their mortgage payments. But a lot of them are doing pretty frequent cash out refinancing. They're pulling the equity out of their buildings, taking on new debt under the idea that they can either raise the rents more and therefore pay higher bills to their bank, or pull money out of the operations of the building. And so they're taking this high debt, pulling money out of maintenance, and then going to the rent guidelines board and say, it's because, you know, you haven't improved high enough rent increases that we're pulling money out of these buildings. No, they're pulling money out of the buildings so that they can show a profit, rising profit margin to these banks, take out a new mortgage, pull all the money out of the building, and then go on a shopping spree and buy a bunch more buildings. That's how the business model works. It's very different than the idea of a single owner living in their building who has, you know, just a few tenants who are paying the mortgage and that's how they get by, which is the image that our mayor has conjured recently. If that's the kind of landlord he's truly worried about, he should rest assured that they are not the landlords of the rent stabilized housing stock, and they will not be affected by this rent guidelines board's decision.
Well, he's that kind of landlord, except he lives in New Jersey. He doesn't live in the building that he owns. So
he also says he's never raised his rent on his tenants.
Oh, well, I'd love to. Man, I hope some reporter gets down there, because I'm sure they may get a different answer. He's not big on the details, this guy. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you make a very important distinction here. Yeah, there are the landlords around town. You know, there are some who are like, you know, maybe the person who owns the 8-unit building, let's say, and they live in one of the apartments, and that's the only building they own. But then the other point that you made earlier, the ones who are sucking the equity out of the building, so they become you know, I never knew what a small landlord is, you know, but this, you know, if I, even if I had an 8-unit building, I'm in charge of the destiny of seven other people, seven other families' housing. It's more power than I should have. So, but it's like, yeah, but they're sucking equity out of their buildings and buying more buildings to build their little empire. It'd be their mini Trumps or whatever. So, I mean, it's an amazing system in that it's become, while the eviction protections are sacrosanct and, you know, so needed, as we'll shift to good cause in a minute or two, you know, but the rent setting mechanism has become so perverted in a way by the real estate industry and those in control that to become this like the best profit making deal in real estate in New York.
Yeah, and I think groups like the Met Council do this and others, but we need to challenge the idea that the point of the rent stabilization system and the rent guidelines board is to keep profits steady for landlords. It's not, especially in times like these of mass suffering that we're going through, both in terms of public health and in terms of the economy. It is not the board's job to guarantee that landlords have the same profit year to year to year. It's their job to make sure that tenants can remain housed and the system can remain intact.
So Andrea, I want to get to, what's next? I mean, we got the 26th with this public meeting by video conference on, which you can watch on the I love that the Rent Guidelines Board has a YouTube channel. It's like, you know, the Rent Guidelines Board and like Bono, like have something in common. I just find that kind of hysterical, but, so you can watch on their YouTube channel, but then they're having two in-person meetings. At the Jamaica Performing Arts Center in Queens on the 13th of June from 5 to 9 at night, and then from 4 to 9 at night at Austus Community College in the Bronx on the Grand Concourse, June 15th from 4 to 9. So they're going to the Bronx and to Queens. Great for the people in the Bronx and Queens. They're not coming to Brooklyn. They never go to Staten Island because there aren't enough there, but you know, although they should, I don't care. They should be made to go everywhere. And they're not holding a public testimony hearing in Manhattan, the most accessible borough because of how mass transit runs. It's kind of outrageous. And then the final vote, I guess, will be in person this year, back to the Great Hall of Cooper Union, but on the 21st. So like, what's the plan here for tenants? What should we be doing now?
I mean, first we need everyone in Brooklyn and Manhattan to call the mayor to get hearings in their boroughs. It's unacceptable for Brooklyn tenants to have to go that hour and a half up to the Bronx or out to Queens to testify. And the city knows this, right? It's no secret how public transit works in New York City. It's no secret how far Brooklyn is from the Bronx and Queens. And so we need tenants to make sure the mayor hears that he's supposed to be a mayor from Brooklyn. And he's leaving Brooklyn tenants out of the cold. And then we need everyone to get on the train, go all the way out to Hostess or to Jamaica Performing Arts Center and testify. And that we have seen in the past when the board's been having large increases, the tenant testifies has at least pushed them lower.
So these are, and there's no, so there's not going to be any, like, they're not even doing like, they didn't even do like these two in person, say, oh, we'll do one day of video testimony or phone testimony. It's just these two in-person days that, you know, the one in Queens is like, you know, way out there in Queens. It's actually pretty close to Kennedy Airport. and then obviously Austus is at 149th and Grand Concourse, which is, you know, pretty far north in the city. But it's still, you know, it's insane what they did.
So tenants can testify by video, can call into the Rent Guidelines Board and can submit written testimony after May 23rd. But that's not the same as the guidelines members having to listen to your testimony, having to look you in the eye as you share your story.
And then there'll be the final vote back at Cooper Union on East 7th Street, you know, over at Cooper Square up there over, you know, East 7th Street in Manhattan. And obviously that, I gather, will be quite a big organizing effort. But by then, really, it's not that it's too late, but by then a lot of the wrangling has gone on and the machinations have happened, which is why those hearings are even more critical. Because this also, what this does is, you know, it limits our public member, our tenant reps, Shayla and Adans, their direct one-on-one contact to the public members to 2 times as opposed to 4 times.
Yes, and that's a big problem.
I think, Sam, did you want to jump in there? I know you're shaking your head in agreement.
Yeah, I mean, people deserve a chance to speak to the people who are going to have a say over how much money they're going to be spending every single month. And the board needs to hear directly from the people.
So the thing is, call 311. That's the easiest way to reach the mayor, you know, unless we have a better phone number for him, you know, or tweet at him. He's on Twitter, you know, and put the hashtag GSD on it. Get stuff done because that's his thing. So call 311, call the city, call the mayor, call City Hall, make a complaint that, you know, there should be hearings in Brooklyn and in, you know, Manhattan at the very least added to the schedule. There certainly is enough time to do it between now and the 21st of June. They could even push the 21st of June to a later date if they needed to get this in, because they have all the way till the end of the month to get this done. And of course, you know, we'll be having updates for you on Rank Guideline stuff throughout the remainder of the season, probably every week between now and the end of June. You know, we'll have more for you here on Housing Notebook about Rank Guidelines. So now I want to take a trip up the river with the both of you, up the river to Albany, we have Tenant Lobby Day coming up on the 17th of May. Now that the state capitol is open again to the public and the legislative office building, and we have buses going up there, and we'll get the info on that in a little bit. But so we're going in for, you know, we've been doing a big fight to get good cause eviction enacted statewide in New York. And Andrea, if you could just give us the thumbnail, what is good cause eviction?
Sure. Good cause eviction would provide basic protections to unregulated tenants. It would mean that a landlord would have to give a reason to evict someone, and it would limit rent increases according to the consumer price index or 3%, whichever is less.
Would it limit the rent increases, or would it create a presumption that if a landlord tried, so it's not really, it's not rent control. It's like if a landlord comes in and says, I want to raise your rent 20%, then you get to say, hold on, I'm not paying that. And if you end up in court, then the landlord has to show why that's justified.
Correct. So it's a defense in housing court, both around a non-renewal of the lease as well as rent increases. So it's far from rent stabilization and rent control, but it does provide a lot of protections to tenants who currently have not.
And you said it's either 3% or 3 times the...
Or 1.5
times
the consumer price index.
Whichever is greater.
Whichever is less.
Whichever is less?
Yes. So the cap would be at 3%. So in high inflationary times like today, where CPI is already over 3%, the maximum rent increase before it could be challenged would be 3%. Sam, am I getting that right?
I think it's the opposite. I think it's whichever is higher.
Right. That's why that was, I think it's
written. Do some quick research.
Yeah, no, I think it's whichever is higher. Although I like your analysis better, Andrea, but I also think it's whichever is higher, which is one of the reasons why, you know, the landlord's screaming that this is going to kill them because it's where it's rent control. But in today's scene where it's like, what are we at 8% CPI at the moment? It's like 12% would be the cap. So if a landlord came in and said, I need 7%, this isn't a non-rent stabilized, non-rent controlled, non-Section 8, non-housing authority. If you're not in any of the regulatory scheme, if the owner of the, you know, deregulated the apartment in, you know, Kingston, whatever, you know, came in and said, I need 7%. Well, that's less than 1.5% the CPI. You can't challenge that. That's my understanding. I think that's the way it is.
I think so too, but we're going to do some quick research and we're going to get the listeners a definitive answer.
Okay. Well, as I said, we like the Shapiro model better. So, but it would also mean that, but also the eviction protections, which has often been overlooked in this whole world of rent eviction protections, the eviction protections for these, you know, was it 1.6 million tenants in New York State with benefit, half of which are in New York City, pretty much. So, you know, which is still a big chunk of housing in New York. I mean, that's something that would be a landmark expansion, wouldn't that be, Andrea?
Yes, I mean, that's one of the most exciting things about this bill is tenants who have been deregulated over time, never regulated, and particularly tenants in upstate where it's sort of the Wild West in housing, where there isn't, you know, housing court the way we have it. It's a town and village court inside of, you know, the volunteer fire station, who it, or anything goes, and they have no regulation. And we wonder why the housing stock in New York State is continuing to deteriorate. And so this would actually give tenants the ability to really organize and fight back for better conditions, particularly around in the rest of the state.
And, you know, the landlords also, they talk about this as if this would be like, you know, the, you know, it'd be like, you know, the imposition of, you know, a communist control over like the housing market. Yet there are places, other places in the country, not one, not very far away, next door, called, that we often make fun of, called New Yorkers, that we often make fun of, called New Jersey, that has had a form of this, of the these kind of eviction protections for a long time.
You know, the social state of New Jersey, you can't pump your own gas and you have tenant protections.
So, and how are you familiar? How, what's the Jersey system work?
So the Jersey system is very similar, except that they don't actually lay out what the rent increase is that can be challenged. It's simply an unconscionable rent increase. And so there are very specific rules around having to renew a lease. And many townships have their own threshold around rent increases.
And the definitive answer is from the legislation, it's 3% or 1.5 of the consumer price index, whichever is higher. So in today's world, it would be roughly 12% would be the ceiling based on what's happening currently. So anything under 12, a landlord will be able to get away with. So, under this bill, which is like quite the generous rent increase, if you ask me. So, you know, but, yeah, it's, yeah, I know. And the eviction protections are critical. And obviously, now what's also interesting about this bill, because of the Erstat law, New York City and the Erstat law, for those that remember, is named after the, I think now deceased finally, whatever, Charlie Erstat, who was Rockefeller's housing commissioner, who invented vacancy decontrol when all from 71 to 74, when all the apartments are getting deregulated, which is why we end up with the Emergency Tenant Protection Act in 74, which then started re-regulating, you know, vacant apartments and vacancy decontrol. I remember once being at a rally that, where one old tenant is holding up a sign and chanting, yelling, "Stop VD." And he was referring to vacancy decontrol. We had to tell him, like, that doesn't really fly. People aren't getting the message we need. So a long time ago. But the Erstat law, which was named after him, also took away from New York City the power to pass laws to improve its housing situation, which is why we always have these battles in Albany. So whereas everywhere outside of New York City could pass a good cause eviction bill for their locality, if they so chose, unless the state passes it, these 800,000 roughly apartments in New York City won't get any protection.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll say municipalities around New York State have been moving to have local good cause ordinances. I think Beacon might have been the most recent one. Albany also has it. Kingston, Hudson, several upstate cities are doing this already. We really need it statewide so it covers all tenants, but New York City does not have that option.
I know there's a fever pitch battle in Rochester, I think, which, you know, the council went south on that, but I know they're not, the Rochester tenants, they're not giving up the fight up there. They're going to see if they could turn that around. The housing vacancy survey, when that comes out, by the way, I'm just curious, Sam, would you know, is it only New York City or is this done nationally or it's just a New York City thing?
It's just a New York City thing. I think all, could be wrong about this, but I think all, counties that are in the emergency tenant protection system, so in rent stabilization, have to do a housing and vacancy survey periodically to show that they're still in a state of housing emergency, which means less than 5% of the livable housing stock is vacant.
Which is why under the Act from 2019, towns that want to go into it, municipalities want to go into it, have to do a similar like survey to get the 5% trigger. So it's interesting. It'd be an interesting move to try to get the state to do one statewide, you know, so we could see what's going on around the state for not only good cause, but also for rent and eviction protections as well. The so we're going up to Albany. So where are we at in this battle, Andrew? I know the governor I don't think the words good cause have ever crossed her lips. We don't know what words cross Brian Benjamin's lips, but I guess he'll do that at trial. Where are we at up in Albany on this now?
So we are just under a month to the end of session. And yes, Governor Hochul is not one of our friends, but she has some battles of her own still around her lieutenant governor. And, you know, there's still going to be a primary, even if there's two primaries this year. And we're going to get a chance to really hold some of these electeds accountable, particularly in the assembly, which we're fighting hard against. And it's time for good cause. And especially if they're going to try and move 421A or 485W or whatever number letter combination they want this week, they really need to think about what's important for tenants.
This is an extremely popular bill. There was recently a poll that found 69% support in New York State for a good cause. People want this protection.
I'm curious, and you may not know the answer to this, either one of you. Would this also cover the mobile home parks, the mobile trailer home parks?
Yeah, so manufactured homes are covered under a different bill. They actually got a form of good cause protection in 2019. And I can say they're actually up in Albany tonight and tomorrow lobbying to solidify those protections, to make sure that they get full protections.
Right, because it's a pretty vulnerable population, the mobile parks, the mobile manufactured home trailer parks, whatever you want to call them. And there's actually a lot of speculation in that industry as well. There's been these national companies coming in and buying them up, just like the same thing here, you know, dark money from God knows where, buying them up and then like just like trying to throw people out or raise the rents on the land hideously. So in the final few minutes we have left before we got to go, we're going to Albany on what, May 17th, I guess? Is that what, a week from tomorrow, actually, right?
Yes, May 17th. And we'll have buses in Brooklyn, Union Square, and Harlem, leaving from New York City. And if folks are interested in signing up, first, they can always email Andrea@metcouncilonhousing.org. And I'm going to attempt to read a link over the airwaves, see how well it goes, at bit.ly, so bit.ly/HJ for A, May 17th, and that's all lowercase. So again, that's bit.ly/HJ4A, May 17th.
It's once again HJ4AMAY17. It'll be on our show page. Bajra, I'm sure we'll have the link up there, and or just email Andrea@councilonhousing.org. And you can get on the bus. In order to be on the bus, you get lunch too, right?
Yes.
Yes. And but in order to be on the bus, you do have to have been vaccinated, right?
Yes, you need to be vaccinated both to get on the bus and to get into the Capitol.
And you have to have your proof with you to show it, right? So you gotta have your card or whatever, one of those apps that have it. So be sure to have that because you need it for the bus and you need to get into the Capitol. And the bus is leaving from Harlem, 125th Street, the Barclays Center, in Brooklyn, Union Square. And if you even go to that bit.ly, if you live outside New York City, I guess they'll try to find some way for you to get up there. So that is May 17th. That's a week from tomorrow up in Albany. That is a critical day for us. The legislative session does end early because of the June primaries, such that they are June 28th, and then another one sometime in August. Such that is. And if I recall, the governor's choice now for lieutenant governor, he's not lieutenant governor yet, right? He hasn't been, but has he been sworn in already? He hasn't resigned from Congress yet. No, he's not lieutenant governor yet, but he's on the ballot, I gather, because of the shenanigans they pulled off last Monday night as we were on the air talking about that. The congressman, why am I blanking on his name all of a sudden right now?
Delgado,
right. Antonio Delgado, who won a Republican swing seat, which we may now lose because of him vacating it. So Governor Hochul, thinking of the national needs, she seems to put herself above everything at all times. But anyway, he is actually one of the few Congress members in New York who did not sign on to the letter from Congress in support of good cause eviction. His name is notoriously absent from that one. of the Democrats in New York that I saw.
So, oh, wow. That's a good eye right there, Scott.
Yeah. So it was mainly downstate folks. He's a little north of the city, but, you know, whatever. He still should have been there. But anyway.
But his constituents are organizing for good cause, and you should know that. Right. Areas that he represents are opting in and passing local good cause ordinances in the Hudson Valley.
He's in Kingston, Hudson. Those are his towns, right? He's basically what, like north of Poughkeepsie and south of Albany, pretty much, right?
Yeah. And that's the vanguard of good cause right now.
Right. Right. Those damn Hudson Valley radicals. They've always been there. Now they got their moment. So, God bless them. So, anyway, I want to thank Andrea for taking your time to join us this evening as always. And Sam Stein, Sam, don't take 10 years to come back again. Update your resume. You have now two appearances. That'll definitely, kick you up, you know, and I should go read. If I kept notes, I could tell you how many times Vic Bach was on, and you could have that as a goal. Maybe we could have you and Vic on together one day. I would love that.
That'd be lovely.
On. Yeah. But anyway, check out CSS at cssny.org, all the great reports there and everything. And I know you have a new one out today that people should check out about good cause eviction, why will not kill housing production in New York. So go check that one out as well. Sorry we didn't get around to talking about that. And remember, stay tuned. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Talk about the RGB stuff. Need help with a housing problem? Give Met Council a call. 212-979-0611. That's 212-979-0611. And thank you, Max, for taking care of us back there in the studio. And take it away. Stay tuned for the Hour of the Wolf.
I'm gonna tell you a story about the house that blew. I had a good job showing up for 5 long years. Lord have mercy. The old landlady was so lovey-dovey for 5 long years. She was so nice and kind in every way. Every Friday evening I come home with my paycheck, she'll smile. She was so lovey-dovey. My meal's on time. My bath water be ready. Everything be ready. It rocked on.
This is the mic check for Cat Radio Cafe.
Testing.
Testing.
Tune into Cat Radio Cafe Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
The Displaced Playwright on Tuesday, May 10th at 9 p.m. will be joined by poet and human rights activist Dean Nirksey, who will read from his new collection of poems, A Country of Strangers, a, quote, new and selected, end quote, title just published by Knopf.
Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
Cat Radio Cafe.
Get a cat's drink coffee.
With tuna ice cream as a side dish.
Check, please.
I'm David Rothenberg, host of a weekly program on WBAI, Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. I want to call your attention to the upcoming program this Saturday, May 14th, when my guests will include Carolyn Warmus, whose trial 3 decades ago was headlined in the tabloids as the Fatal Attraction Murder Trial. After serving nearly 3 decades in prison, released a couple of years ago, Carolyn will talk about her struggle to clear her name. A cry of innocence. One of her attorneys joining us is Jeff Deskovic, himself a man who served 15 years in prison in New York State for murder before the Innocence Project cleared him. He will join us with Carolyn as we explore this scramble for justice. Saturday morning, May 14th, 8 to 10 a.m.
The next WBAI Community Advisory Board meeting will be on Sunday, May 15th at 1 p.m. The meeting will be by teleconference. The call-in number is 623-600-3766. The meeting ID number is 963-003. Everyone is welcome to call in and join the meeting. If you attend 3 out of 4 consecutive CAB meetings and are a member of WBAI, you will become a CAB member. So, please join the CAB, which evaluates programming. Again, the call-in number is 623-600-3766. The meeting ID number is 963-003. Thank you.
Time passed. Many romantic feelings were associated with radio broadcasting, as with aviation, with motoring across the far western United States.
50 years ago, a young genius made a classic that could never be retold. Now, it